The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight, with Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening. This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Welcome to a Wednesday, and it is the day before Thanksgiving, so this will be a short week. I'm Nicole Sandler. Thanks for joining us. Donald Trump is down here in Florida. Luckily, I live about an hour away from where Mar-a-Lago is in Palm Beach, so it hasn't impacted me too much. I know there was a march of supporters of the Haitian community that greeted him yesterday when he arrived. According to the local paper, apparently there were some Trump fans there to greet him as well. I don't understand those people, but there's a lot I don't understand these days. So what else is new? Before he left, as he was leaving the White House, Trump finally weighed in on Roy Moore. For the last 2 weeks, what we had been hearing is things like this.
Does the president believe Roy Moore's accusers, or does he think Roy Moore should drop out of this race?
Look, the president believes that these allegations are very troubling and should be taken seriously, and he thinks that the people of Alabama should make the decision on who their next senator should be.
So, and that was a good answer, and it was the answer that she kept giving. It was even, well, Trump didn't answer questions. He'd be shouted as he was walking or at the cabinet meeting or at any other photo op. The reporters would shout questions about Roy Moore, and he would just not answer. Sarah Sanders kept repeating that, you know, we're going to leave it up to the people of Alabama. That was until yesterday.
I can tell you one thing for sure. We don't need a liberal person in there, a Democrat, Jones. I've looked at his record. It's terrible in crime.
Right.
It's terrible in the border. It's terrible in the military. I can tell you for a fact, we do not need somebody that's going to be bad on crime, bad on borders, bad with the military, bad for the Second Amendment.
He's a Second Amendment supporter, by the way.
Well, he denies it. Look, he denies it.
He denies it. What more do you want?
What is really going on, and you look at all the things that have happened over the last 48 hours, he totally denies it. He says it didn't happen.
Totally.
And, you know, you have to listen to him also.
You
do? You're talking about, he said 40 years ago this did not happen. So, you know.
Are you going to campaign for it?
I'll be letting you know next week. But I can tell you, you don't need somebody who's soft on crime like Jones.
Soft on crime, where he gets that, I don't know.
What is your message to women, sir, during this pivotal moment in our country where we were talking about sexual misconduct, you had your own allegations against you?
Let me just tell you, Roy Moore denies it. That's all I can say. He denies it.
Again, this is like the third or fourth time already.
He totally denies it.
He totally denies it.
Women are very special. I think it's a very special time because a lot of things are coming out, and I think that's good for our society, and I think it's very, very good for women. And I'm very happy a lot of these things are coming out, and I'm very happy it's being exposed.
Women are very special, he says.
I don't know. Look, I don't want to speak for Al Franken. I don't know what happened. I just heard about Conyers 2 minutes ago. As far as Franken's concerned, he's going to have to speak for himself. I'd rather have him speak for himself.
Well, there's a first. The first time he chose not to openly excoriate the Democrat. But I want to go back to this women are very special comment. I think it's a very special time. He said a lot of things are coming out, and I think that's good for our society, and I think it's very, very good for women, and I'm very happy a lot of these things are coming out. I'm very happy it's being exposed. That's the direct quote. My God, this man repeats himself incessantly, doesn't he? Anyway, the Washington Post today has a story, President Trump and accusations of sexual misconduct, the complete list. I don't know if it's a complete list, but they do have a list of many of the allegations against Trump in their fact checker section, along with the 13 women. I played a film last week, I believe, from Brave New Films that had 16 women who've accused him. So it's not a complete list here. Let's see. It says, here's a list of 13 women who have publicly come forward with claims that Trump had physically touched them inappropriately in some way, and the witnesses they provided. Oh, I see. We did not include claims that were made only through Facebook posts or other social media or in lawsuits that subsequently were withdrawn. We also did not include the accounts of former beauty contestants who say Trump walked in on them when they were half nude because there were no allegations of touching. Wow, we've really lowered the bar here, haven't we? Trump had bragged on the Howard Stern show of his inspections during the pageants. Quote, you know, they're standing there with no clothes. Is everybody okay? And you see these incredible looking women. And so I sort of get away with things like that, he said. So they have a list of all the women, starting with Natasha Stoyanov, with the allegation, for instance, she said, her story is, while she was interviewing Trump in 2005 for an article for People magazine about the first anniversary of his third marriage, Trump lured her into a room at Mar-a-Lago, forced her against a wall, and abruptly kissed her, forcing his tongue into her mouth. He then said they were going to have an affair. And then they list at least five or six collaborators. Corroborators, including Marina Grassic, who has known Stoyanov for more than 25 years. She said she got a call from her friend the day after the alleged attack, detailing exactly how Trump pushed her against a wall. And it goes on like that. Liz McNeil, at the time a reporter for People, she's now an editor. She said she heard about the incident the day after Stoyanov returned from her assignment. Quote, she was very upset and told me how he shoved her against the wall. And it goes on like that. See, what the Washington Post did here is they took the allegations and the contemporaneous accounts that are the only proof we can have, because these kind of things happen in private. They happen when, by design, when there's no one else around. So it's a fascinating article, but I'm not going to detail all of these. You can read it. I'll put a link on my blog with today's podcast at NicoleSandler.com after the show. So if you want to read up on all the women who've accused Trump and get their contemporaneous corroborators, they're all included here. And yet we still have Donald Trump saying the same defense he gives Roy Moore. He's saying they're all lying. All the women who came forward are lying. And that's how he can defend Roy Moore, by saying he says it didn't happen. He totally denies it. Totally is the thing that makes it all the more relevant there, because it was a total denial, not just a denial. There's more today. The stories about John Conyers are getting worse. The House Ethics Committee has taken up a investigation against John Conyers. Apparently there's another woman who's come forward to say just bad allegations against John Conyers. I don't know what's, I guess this stuff has been going on for a long time. It's just now all coming to the fore. And that's a good thing that we're hearing about it now, that men are being called out on these actions. I do worry when there's one accuser, if the possibility for abuse of power. I mean, this is all abuse of power, isn't it? But the abuse of this time in history could be coming for political reasons. I have serious, I just heard a caller on Tom Hartman's show talking about Al Franken and how convenient it is that the biggest opponent of net neutrality. I mean, for the longest time, Al Franken was the one screaming about net neutrality. And here we are 2 weeks ahead of 3 weeks ahead of a vote in the FCC on killing the net neutrality rules. All of a sudden, there's this alleged or attempted takedown of Al Franken in the Senate by someone who is a Republican operative. It's just all a little too convenient. And that's why I say, you know, there has to be more investigation. And that's why I'm glad that even Al Franken called for the Senate Ethics Committee to do an investigation. Because if this was a setup, hopefully that would come out. And if it's not, if it's factual, they'll find other accusers. And if there's, you know, more accusers, then it's more likely to have happened. Now we have Republican... hold on one second. We have Republican Representative Joe Barton, who is now unsure if he'll run for re-election following a nude photo of him that posted on social media. Ay, ay, ay. Joe Barton of Texas has released a statement apologizing for a graphic nude photo of him that circulated on social media earlier this week. He just announced, by the way, that he was running for re-election, and now he's saying he doesn't know if he will. Hey, if it's going to keep Joe Barton out of Congress, that would be a good thing. Hi, who's this?
This is Proud Skell, or Al, from Alabama.
Hey, Proud Skell.
I'm giving you an update on Doug Jones. His strategy before Roy Moore's, the allegations came through, was to get all the likely voters he could, particularly African Americans. It looks like there is a battle brewing whether he can get all the urban voters, the African Americans, because pretty much he's going to lose the rural vote.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, they are religious idiots. And they're pretty much brainwashed.
Well, their problem with Doug Jones, aside from the fact that he's a Democrat, which I understand is like a dirty word down there, is that he's pro-choice.
Right? Yeah, but I'm not getting into pro-choice so far because I've lived in Alabama for 40 years, and I can tell you, they didn't get into the pro-life movement until the TV preachers got into it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't know how deep it runs. But your friend Francis Schaefer had a good point about how religion, especially fundamentalism, acts as brainwashing.
Yep.
And it
that would be Frank Schaefer. Francis Schaefer was his father. Frank Schaefer is the son. Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Had a played a great role. Also, Roy Moore does a lot of preaching in these backwards churches.
Mm-hmm.
And he uses the money from this preaching for his foundation that raises money for no-show jobs for his kids.
Oh, great. Yeah, everything about Roy Moore sounds really sleazy. There's a there was an interview, I guess, I don't know where it was held, on the Today Show or something, with a former police officer who worked around Gadsden back during the time that these events were alleged to have happened. And she said that, you know, they knew, in fact, it was her job to keep Roy Moore away from the young girls during the high school football games because it was known that he preyed on them.
Well, I know this preaching of Roy Moore's has happened all the way into the early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
So this goes way back. This is not a recent thing. Also, I heard about that Bernie Bernstein call.
Right.
I think that call was targeted. And the reason is to certain areas in Alabama. The reason is Birmingham has a sizable Jewish population. And we are going to see, when you're looking at the voting in Alabama, there's going to be an urban versus rural vote.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to happen, particularly with Huntsville, Birmingham, and Tuscaloosa versus the rest of the state.
Okay.
And it looks like that Jones will have to get around 35-40% of the rural vote if he wants to win.
Well, you know, it's not over till it's over, and who knows? It's things I'm reading say a lot of the, you know, there are Republican women who are so incensed by the allegations that many of them are going to vote for a Democrat for the first time ever in their lives. We'll see what happens. I mean, look, do I think Jones will win? No. Do I think the people of Alabama will vote for Roy Moore? Probably. It's just a sad commentary on our times. These are the times that we're living in right now.
Have a great holiday.
Thank you so much, Al. Thanks for the call and the update. I really appreciate it. So there's Al calling from Alabama. Al in Alabama. I Roy Moore will probably win, but I can still hold out hope that he won't, that people are better than that, that they'll see through it and they'll say, no, we're not going to go there. Only time will tell. All right, let's take a break. We'll check in with what's news, and then I'm going to share a story with you today. It is the day before Thanksgiving, and so we're going to get off of politics for a little while, if that's okay with you. Frankly, I'd like to get off politics entirely, if it was only possible, right? But it isn't.
I read the news today.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Donald Trump finally weighed in on allegations against Roy Moore Tuesday afternoon as he was getting ready to board Marine One on his way to Florida for Thanksgiving. Seth Meyers has more.
For 2 weeks since the news about Moore first broke, we've been waiting to find out if Trump could summon at least a shred of decency and disavow a man accused of preying on teenage girls. And today, we found out that the old saying is true, sexual predators of a feather flock together.
We don't need a liberal person in there, a Democrat.
Is an accused child molester better than a Democrat? Is an accused
child
molester
better than a Democrat? Well, he denies it. I mean, if you look at what is really going on and you look at all the things that have happened over the last 48 hours, he totally denies it. He says it didn't happen.
And in fairness, to Trump, who are you going to believe? Nine women who don't know each other and whose stories have been corroborated by dozens of independent sources? Or a guy who looks like the Marlboro Man's deadbeat dad? But one of the most revealing parts came when Trump denounced Moore's Democratic rival, Doug Jones, a lifelong prosecutor who convicted the KKK members responsible for the Birmingham church bombing that killed four little girls, as soft on crime.
Jones, I've looked at his record. It's terrible on crime. I can tell you for a fact, we do not need somebody that's going to be bad on crime. But I can tell you, you don't need somebody who's soft on crime like Jones.
He's soft on crime. You're siding with an accused child molester over a guy who prosecuted the KKK. You're so soft, you look like a tub of melted Play-Doh.
Trump was asked what his message is to women.
Women are very special. I think it's a very special time because a lot of things are coming out, and I think that's good for our society, and I think it's very, very good for women, and I'm very happy a lot of these things are coming out, and I'm very happy. I'm very happy it's being exposed.
The Washington Post on Wednesday detailed a list of at least 13 women who've accused the president of sexual misconduct, along with the evidence to back up their stories. The House Ethics Committee launched a formal investigation into allegations that Congressman John Conyers of Michigan sexually harassed female aides and used office funds to settle a former staffer's claim that she was fired after rejecting his advances. Shortly after the probe was announced, BuzzFeed News reported a second allegation by a former Conyers aide who claimed in court filings this year that he sexually harassed her. BuzzFeed reported the 2015 settlement between Conyers and an unnamed former employee late Monday. Conyers, 88, is the longest-serving member of the House and top Democrat on the powerful Judiciary Committee. In the wake of a Washington Post report on sexual harassment claims against Charlie Rose, the newsman has been fired by CBS, and production and distribution of his show have been halted by PBS and Bloomberg, CBS reports.
CBS News President David Rhodes said in a statement, "Despite Charlie's important journalistic contribution to our news division, there is absolutely nothing more important in this or any organization than ensuring a safe professional workplace, a supportive environment where people feel they can do their best work. We need to be such a place." After that statement, at least three women who asked not to be identified said they experienced unwanted sexual contact from Rose while working at CBS News. Eight women who either worked for his independently produced show on PBS or wanted to told the Washington Post they faced his unwanted sexual advances from the late 1990s to 2011. They accused him of groping their breasts, buttocks, and genital areas and walking around naked while they were either working at his home or traveling on business. In his own statement to the Post, Rose apologized for his inappropriate behavior and said he was greatly embarrassed, although he added, "I do not believe that all of these allegations are accurate." Washington Post reporter Amy Britton co-wrote the story.
Within an hour or two after publication of our story, my inbox was already flooded with dozens of emails from individuals who wanted to reach out to us.
How could this have gone for so long without being noticed or reported?
Within the office, this was relatively pretty well known. And I think that many of them had a tremendous fear about speaking out against someone as powerful as Mr. Rose.
Another day and more reports of sexual misconduct. Olympic gymnast Gabby Douglas says team doctor Larry Nassar sexually abused her, too. Disney and Pixar Studios head of animation John Lasseter has taken a leave of absence amid complaints of sexual harassment. Eight people have been rescued and are in good condition after a U.S. Navy transporter plane carrying 11 crew and passengers crashed into the Pacific Ocean off Japan, the U.S. Navy's 7th Fleet said Wednesday. The search for the remaining three is continuing. Continuing a long-running tradition, the president on Tuesday afternoon pardoned a turkey. But in the usually fun ceremony, Trump couldn't resist yet another dig at his predecessor, Barack Obama.
As many of you know, I have been very active in overturning a number of executive actions by my predecessor. However, I have been informed by the White House counsel's office that Tater and Tot's pardons cannot under any circumstances be revoked. So we're not going to revoke them. So Tater and Tot, you can rest easy.
And that's a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler, wishing you and your family a very happy Thanksgiving. I hope you have a great weekend, and we'll see you back here at What's News and on The Nicole Sandler Show on Tuesday.
These are the sounds of crushed souls. The sounds of despair from former radio personalities languishing in the purgatory of corporate consolidation. These former radio personalities have lost their livelihoods, not because they weren't entertaining or informative, but because they don't meet today's corporate terrestrial broadcast standards of being smelly, overweight douchebags, seething with vein-popping hatred. These radio refugees and their audiences have since migrated to the internet. But their struggle continues as the quest for monetization ensues. Nicole Sandler is leading the way to reestablishing thought-provoking and entertaining radio. And you can help by clicking the donate button on NicoleSandler.com. Donate today, or as much and as often as you can. Dry the tears of listeners by removing the rotting stench of corporate radio. Won't you help?
Well, best laid plans. My guest for today just canceled. I'm going to share a story with you in a few minutes. But before we get to that, I may as well keep going on the news and open up the phone lines if there's anything you want to talk about on this day before Thanksgiving. 954-889-6410 is the number, 954-889-6410. Or you can just Skype to me at Nicole Sandler because I find myself with some extra time today now. The way people are defending Roy Moore, I'm going to play this one clip for you. It was a call-in to an Alabama radio show. I don't even know the name of the show. I know it was a Christian activist by the name of Flip Benham. And just listen to the excuse he's making for Roy Moore.
Well, I think that, number one, you need to understand the 40 years ago what the Sitzenleben was like in Alabama. It wasn't unusual. I mean, Judge Roy Moore graduated from West Point and then went on into the service, served in Vietnam, and then came back and was in law school. All of the ladies that, or many of the ladies that he possibly could have married were not available then.
Oh.
They were already married, maybe somewhere. And so,
wait a minute. So this guy is saying that all the women in his age group were married. None were available to him. So that's why he started preying on young teen girls?
So he looked in a different direction. And always with the parents of younger ladies. By the way, the lady that he's married to now, Miss Kayla, is a younger woman.
Oh,
he did
God.
That because, you know, there's something about a purity of a young woman.
Oh, my
and
God.
And there's something about something that's good, that's true, that's straight. And he looked for that.
Kayla was divorced, right?
He didn't hang out.
Wait a minute. Kayla was divorced, wasn't she?
I don't know.
I guess yes. She wasn't pure.
Yes, by the way, she was. So that's the purity that
but
you're talking
we do
about.
Have
anyway, go ahead.
So we do well, have.
Hey,
Flip. We have.
Well, but, you need to know what you're talking. Hey, but Flip.
Right,
Flip, before you start spouting off. Hey, buddy, before you start spouting off at the mouth, you need to know what you're talking about. That's all I'm saying.
But that's confirmation that he did date teenagers. Flip.
Thank you for telling me.
Hey, Flip, is it confirmation then that he dated possibly as young as 16-year-olds?
Yes.
How would I know that?
So well, you're telling us that he came back and that he was having to date teenagers because other women were already married, Flip. You can talk over me, but nobody hears you.
I like this woman. I don't know who she is, but I like her.
All I'm going to ask you is this. Is it all right for a man who's 30 years old to date and court a young lady who is 14 years old with their parents' consent?
No.
No.
Not at my house.
No.
No, it's not. Not in the 80s.
Okay, so who determined that?
No.
Okay, so the parents don't have a right to do that?
No.
Parents have a right. I have a right to say that doesn't work for me.
All right, let me ask you, Flip, in an effort to get educated by you, let me ask you a question. Is it all right for a man to court and date a young lady with her parents' permission, who is 10 years old? Yes or no?
Well, I don't think that would happen.
Yes or no?
Well, I don't know.
Is it okay? Right. Would it be yes okay with no. you with the parents' permission?
What
yes or no?
Talking about another logical.
What question. Are you talking about? I'm using your exact okay, same question. I'm just using a different age,
can
pal.
Can God make a stone so heavy that he can't lift it? Yes or no?
What?
Flip.
But back
yes
to the 10-year-old.
No. Flip, you asked me, back to the 10-year-old. You have not responded to the question asked. Flip, I'm just using your rules, buddy. But I'm just using your rules. By your logic, you have to answer the question.
You
need to answer the question, Flip. Is it permissible if the parents agree? Is it permissible if the parents agree for a 10-year-old child to date a grown man? Yes or no?
No, the parents.
No, no.
Look at that!
Congratulations, Flip. Now you're in the modern world.
So there's a little clip of a radio show from Alabama. Now that heartens me to hear that there are Alabama radio hosts who are reasonable. Because honestly, I don't know. But this guy is Christian activist Flip Benham, who was calling in, making excuses and basically alluding that it's okay if a 32-year-old man dates a 14-year-old girl as long as he gets permission from her parents. If there's any parent that says it's okay for their 14-year-old daughter to date a 32-year-old man, I would hope that they'd have their parental rights taken away from them, because that is child abuse. And that's why their question about a 10-year-old did make sense, because it's, well, it is just as bad. It's still a child. I'm not a big fan of the Fox. I don't watch Fox News, but I came across a clip of Neil Cavuto, who I've never watched his show, don't know much about him, but he did a rant. He called out Donald Trump, and I thought it was so epic that why not? We've got time today. I thought I'd share it with you.
A president angry at a dad for refusing to say thank you and so angry at...
I guess I should start. What he starts off talking about is that LeVar Ball, the father of one of the three UCLA basketball players who was detained in China for shoplifting. Apparently, while Trump was up tweeting at 5:30 this morning, he's in a feud with this father. The father is saying that Trump didn't do anything to get his kid out of jail. Trump is saying, if you don't, you know, basically you need to thank me because I got your kid out of jail. The father wouldn't. And so they're going back and forth. They sound like two idiots, frankly, both of them. So that's what this is about at the beginning.
A president angry at a dad for refusing to say thank you and so angry at a U.S. senator that he all but says, screw you. Forget about either comment not being presidential. At what point does the president see such remarks don't even border on being human? So what if LeVar Ball doesn't credit the president for getting his son and two other UCLA basketball players out of a jam and likely jail after being charged with shoplifting in China? And so what if Senator Jeff Flake is caught off mic saying the Republican Party would be toast if it stuck with the president and Roy Moore? Is it me or does the president look like he's punching down when these are the incidents that get him all riled up? Like he's using a bazooka to respond to a pea shooter? Is it really necessary? Especially when in the case of the UCLA thing, all three players did thank the president for getting them home, including LeVar Ball's son, LiAngelo. And in the case of Jeff Flake, did zing the president, yes, but saved his real fire for Roy Moore and the dangers he represents for the Republican Party. No matter what you think of Senator Flake, does it justify the president's over-the-top reaction to Senator Flake tweeting that he will be a no on tax cuts because his political career anyway is toast? Lovely. Keep tweeting stuff like that, Mr. President, and those tax cuts just could be toast. You might call him part of the swamp and not care, but throwing mud at a U.S. senator doesn't make you any less swamp-like, so maybe you should care. And wishing maybe you should have left those UCLA players in China because a dad wouldn't thank you makes me wonder whether this isn't about players or senators. This is about you.
You think?
And respect shown to you, and constant praise shown to you, and gratitude bordering on groveling shown to you.
You think?
As president of the United States, doesn't that already come with the territory? So why are you clawing for more real estate? You've got the real estate. You've got the White House. You've got all the advantage of being the most powerful human being on the planet that you don't have to throttle any human being who offends you on the planet. Let your achievements speak for themselves. Let your clear influence to get those players out of China speak for you. Not a kid's dad who just might be embarrassed, but that kid and his buddies who already told the nation and you they were grateful. Pick your fights, because neither of these seems worth the fuss. You wanted a thank you, you got it. You wanted a reason to go after a senator you hate, you pounced on it. But last time I checked, you are the president of the United States. Why don't you act like it?
Because he's a narcissistic, egomaniacal, megalomaniac, nut job who used his reality TV show to catapult him into the presidency. That's why. He may be the president of the United States, but there's no way ever he'll ever act like it, because he doesn't know what it means, because he doesn't have it within him. So that was Neil Cavuto from Fox. And when people on Fox start talking like that, you know that Trump is in trouble. But meanwhile, Trump was out playing golf this morning. He's back at Mar-a-Lago now. Aren't we lucky? But he's working. They're going to have him all busy the whole time he's down here working. Right. This is his 77th time or the 99th time at one of his properties, and the 70-something time he's played golf, or maybe it's the other way around, something ridiculous. And in just over 300 days in office, he has spent almost 100 days at one of his properties. And we've still got three more years of this to deal with. Yeah. All right. Let's take a break. We'll come back on the other side, and I'll tell you my story, okay? My Thanksgiving Day story. It's the reason why Thanksgiving is now my favorite holiday ever. If you want to weigh in on anything going on this week, 954-889-6410 is the number. We'll be right back.
Was the first Thanksgiving feast in 1621, 1608, 1598, or 1565? I'll tell you today on Hightower's Radio Lowdown. It's time to talk turkey. No, not the butterball sitting in the Oval Office. I'm talking about the real thing, the big bird, 46 million of which we Americans will devour on this Thanksgiving Day. It was the Aztecs who first domesticated the gallo pavo, but leave it to the Spanish explorers to foul up the bird's origins. They declared it to be related to the peacock. Wrong. They also thought the peacock originated in Turkey. Wrong. And they thought turkey was located in Africa. Well, you can see the Spanish were pretty confused. Actually, the origin of Thanksgiving is confused. The popular assumption is that it was first celebrated by the Mayflower immigrants and the Wampanoag natives at Plymouth, Massachusetts, 1621. They feasted on venison, furkies, Wampanoag for gobblers, eels, mussels, corn, and beer. But wait, say Virginians, the first precursor to our annual November Foodapalooza was not in Massachusetts. The Thanksgiving feast originated down here in Jamestown Colony back in 1608. Whoa there, hold your horses, pilgrims. Folks in El Paso, Texas, say it all began way out there in 1598, when Spanish settlers sat down with the people of the Piro and Manso tribes, gave thanks, then feasted on roasted duck, geese, and fish. Ha, says a Florida group, asserting that the very, very first Thanksgiving happened in 1565, when the Spanish settlers of San Augustine and friends from the Timucuan tribe chowed down on cocido, a stew of salt pork, garbanzo beans, and garlic, washing it all down with red wine. This is Jim Hightower saying, wherever it began and whatever the purist claim is official, Thanksgiving today is as multicultural as America. So let's enjoy. Kick back, give thanks we're in a country with such ethnic richness, and dive into your turkey rellenos, mushu turkey, turkey falafel, barbecue.
If you'd like more of Jim Hightower's real populism, check out the Hightower Lowdown. Jim's monthly newsletter gives you the real lowdown on which corporations, by name, are doing what to the middle class, our environment, and our democracy. Each month, the Hightower Lowdown brings you facts you didn't know, along with actions you can take to fight back. It also comes with a sense of humor. Hightower believes we can fight the gods and still have fun. Plus, get this, it's cheap. Only $15 brings you 12 issues a year. For real populism, go to HightowerLowdown.org.
Can't afford a monthly donation? Is that what's getting you down, Bunky? But maybe you shop on Amazon.com occasionally?
Well then, just use the NicoleSandler.com Amazon portal, and we'll get a small commission on all your purchases.
But I just bought...
Don't worry, we can't see what you bought.
Just bookmark Amazon through the NicoleSandler.com portal and use it. Every purchase helps Nicole stay on the air.
Yeah, you know, if you are going to do any of your holiday shopping on Amazon, I hope you'll use my link. At NicoleSandler.com, you'll see on the menu, Amazon portal. Just click there, use that to get into Amazon, and any purchases you make through that site, we get a little commission on. I know that some podcasters have had trouble with Amazon, cutting them off. Frankly, my show is so small these days that I don't think they take notice of me, so... hopefully they won't cut me off. All right. I said I had a story to tell you why Thanksgiving is my favorite holiday. And it goes back 17 years. 17 years ago today, or 17 years ago, actually, Thanksgiving fell on November 23rd as well as it does this year. So 17 years ago on this day, on November 22nd, I was in a tiny village called Karakastek, in the country of Kazakhstan. Inside, in Karakastek, was an orphanage, and I was there getting to know my daughter. I had arrived in Kazakhstan the day before, actually a day and a half before. So this was the second day that I had gotten to go to the orphanage to meet my child. I went over there to adopt her. You see, November is National Adoption Month. And every November, I try to do a segment on adoption, and that's who my guest was. Back, it's got to be 11 years ago now, I was on the air at WINZ in Miami. I did the morning show there, and I had gotten an email from a listener who said, hey, November is National Adoption Month. How about doing an interview on adoption? And I had been looking for someone to talk to about it because, as you can tell, it's a subject near and dear to my heart. So this guy's name is Rob LaMarche. He's these days the executive director of an adoption agency here in Miami. And every year he comes on the air with me. Well, he was supposed to come on with me today, and sadly he got sick and couldn't join us today. So I'm left on my own, but I figured I'd tell you a little bit about my story. So there I was in 1999, living in Los Angeles, doing fairly well. I worked in radio, had a great career, was making decent money at the time. It was before radio imploded. It was before it had totally fallen apart thanks to consolidation and the Federal Communications, the Telecommunications Act of 1996. Thank you, Bill Clinton, but I digress. Anyway, I was doing well. The only thing I didn't have in my life was a husband or any prospects. But I always knew I wanted to be a mother, and I was coming in, you know, I was approaching 40, and I thought, you know, one day I just woke up and I said, what the hell am I waiting for? I mean, I can do this on my own. And I immediately went online and started researching international adoption. I went international because I was a single woman, and to do a domestic adoption, most birth mothers want, you know, want a family. They want two parents for their kid. And I just thought I'd look into Russian adoption since my heritage is Russian. And thus started an 18-month process. I call it my labor period. Did a whole lot of research on different agencies and different countries' programs. And to make a long story short, or not so short, we've got some time to fill. I wound up adopting my daughter from Kazakhstan after, you have to really jump through a lot of hoops. You have to put together what they call a dossier, and, including, all aspects of your life. I mean, they examine everything. You have to get a home study from a licensed social worker. And then employment records, letters of recommendation, pictures, all kinds of documents, things I can't even remember. But I'll tell you, if you're interested in any of this, on my blog at NicoleSandler.com, you'll see on the menu, the pull-down menu, Nicole Sandler Show. Under that, you'll see Nicole and Allison's adoption story. I have my entire adoption journal up there, and it's longer than I can recount to you in 20 minutes here on the show. So feel free to check that out. There's tons of pictures and all kinds of stuff there. And all of the paperwork, the whole paper chase I had to go through. Each document had to be notarized and then apostilled. And an apostille is basically a notary seal on a notary that's used for international transactions of whatever sort. I was living in Los Angeles at the time, as I said. That stuff gets really, really expensive, by the way. So I did my whole dossier. Then it gets translated to Russian and it gets sent off to Russia. Well, right around the time I got my dossier in, Vladimir Putin became president of Russia. And everyone was saying, oh, don't worry, he's not going to touch adoptions. Well, he did. One of the very first things he did was put a moratorium on international adoptions. And so there were no babies coming out of Russia. And then my agency would get word of, well, this one region has opened up. And so we would redo my dossier and send it to that region. And this went on for over a year. And then finally, after almost a year and a half, I get a call from the coordinator at the adoption agency I was working with, who said, there's a little girl that I think you should see. But she's a little older than you wanted, because I had asked for a baby girl under a year old. And she's in Kazakhstan, not Russia. And I thought, And I told myself, no, I'm not going to do that. But I, at this point, I just wanted a referral already. A referral is when you get a package of information, pictures, sometimes a video, medical information, as much as they have, and whatever else they put together on this child. And I said, well, send me her stuff and I'll look at it. And I had made up my mind that there was no way I wasn't going to Kazakhstan. Mostly because I didn't want to have to redo the whole dossier again. So they overnighted me a package and they sent it to my radio station where I worked. And I was the program director there. And so I get into work in the morning and FedEx shows up and the package comes and I go in my office and I close the door. And first thing I see are these two pictures of this precious little girl who looked much older than the 15 months they said, but so tiny. Her face, she looked like she was an old soul. And just this tiny little girl with these huge eyes looking out at me. And then there was a video and I put the video in. And by the time the 2.5 minute video was done, I thought, that's my daughter. I found her. Sometimes you just know. And so the next 6 weeks were a whirlwind. They had to redo my dossier, get it translated into Kazakh and sent over there. And I had to make travel arrangements. I wound up flying into first Frankfurt, Germany, and switched planes, and then flew into Almaty, Kazakhstan, where I had an apartment. I think it cost the equivalent of like $35 a night. It was two bedrooms, two bathrooms, a full kitchen, a full apartment. But I was going to be there for a month, so I needed it. So anyway, I get in. It was the middle of the night. My coordinators picked me up at the airport, the coordinators in Kazakhstan, and took me to the apartment. And then they said, we'll be back to pick you up tomorrow morning to go to the orphanage. And off we went. I went to meet my baby girl. And I'll never forget the moment. I'm waiting in this room. There was another couple there who I met once we got to Kazakhstan. It turned out they were from Utah. This was the first time they were ever out of Utah, and they were going to Kazakhstan to adopt two children. So, it's bringing back a lot of memories. So we get to the orphanage, and I'm waiting in this room. The place is just run down and raggedy, and after waiting what seemed like an interminable amount of time, they bring her in and they put her in my arms. And a feeling that I just I can't explain. It was pretty magical. And so we got to hang out for a couple of hours that first day and went back the second day. And a few more hours, we got to feed the kids lunch and change them. We had to bring, they had nothing there. We brought diapers, we brought gifts, we brought supplies, we brought a lot of money for them to buy furniture for the dining room. Because there were some babies there, but there were also some toddlers and young children. I think there were a lot of, another orphanage was being repaired, so they had kids from other orphanages there. We didn't get to see a whole lot of the orphanage. They pretty much kept us in the room where we were visiting with the children. And so the third day we went to the court. The third day I had my court date. Now, the way the law is written there, it's supposed to be you spend 15 days visiting with the child at the orphanage, then you go to court, and then there's another 15-day waiting period. Somehow, I got to go to court on the third day. So we went to court, and if you look on my blog, on the adoption page, there are pictures from all of these things that I'm talking about. I really thought I was have a guest on and I wasn't going to have to show you these. So I don't have anything ready to go for you here on YouTube. The court hearing, my part of it lasted maybe 15 minutes. I had my translator there. the chief pediatrician from the orphanage came with us. Was there and testifying. They asked, why did I want to adopt this child? Why from Kazakhstan? They asked about my qualifications to be a parent. How difficult was it going to be for me as a single mother? You know, they asked a lot of good questions. Then they had the prosecutors, who are the child's advocates there from the state, asking questions. And after we all finished, the judge said that he granted the adoption. But he didn't, I forget the term for it, but basically we'd have to wait out the 15-day waiting period, which was just fine. So then after I went, then the other couple, they had their court date and they were granted their adoptions as well. And then it was our last night. So our last night as childless people, we went for a Chinese dinner because China is right next door to Kazakhstan. So we had a great meal, our last meal without children around. The next day we got up, we went to the orphanage. We had to bring clothes to put the kids in because seriously, they came to us with nothing. So we went back to the orphanage. They dressed the kids in the clothes we brought. They do a little ceremony there with champagne and cookies. When any child leaves the orphanage, they do champagne and cookies with the staff, which I thought was lovely. And then we got to go back. So there I was in this apartment in Almaty, Kazakhstan with my new daughter for the next 15 days. And we got to explore Kazakhstan. We really got to do a lot of things. It was, in retrospect, I'm glad I had those 15 days with her because we got to know each other. If we had just gotten on a plane and come home, it would have been too much too fast. You know, she had spent her first 18 months living in an orphanage. It was all she knew. So to take her out of that surroundings and put her into something new was had to be traumatic. And but she adjusted pretty well. She was so tiny and so skinny. And I spent the next 2 weeks fattening her up. On the way out, there was a consulate, I believe, in Almaty we had to go to get the paperwork. We had to run around to get a new birth certificate. And we had to get a passport for Allison and visa. And so there were a lot of busy things that had to be done over the course of those 2 weeks. And then we had to go out through the U.S. Embassy in Moscow. So we wound up leaving after a number of delays, and this was right around the holidays. By now, by the time we left Almaty, by the time we left Kazakhstan, it was, I think, December 13th. And now you're getting into the holiday period where it would be impossible to get a flight if we couldn't get out. And the night we were supposed to leave, the visas didn't come through. So we were delayed an extra day, but all worked out in the end. So we wound up flying into Moscow, got in the middle of the night. The U.S. demands that the child be examined by an American doctor or an American affiliated doctor in Moscow. So the whole thing is a scam. They really, it's all about money changing hands. Really. So the doctor came up to the hotel room and examined Allison for all of 5 minutes. Here's $100. Thank you very much. We had a nice breakfast, went out walking. I went out walking in Moscow looking for diapers because I needed diapers for her. And all I could find were little liquor stores. Like on every corner, there was a liquor store, but I couldn't find a store to get diapers in. Go figure. And it was a chilly, cold, rainy day. We did go to Red Square, so I did some shopping. I have a picture of me holding Allison in front of St. Basil's. That's what the picture they show. It's actually a church. It's not the Kremlin, the big, colorful building with the big bulbs on top. I'm holding Allison. She was sleeping, and she got very, very heavy as I carried her around Red Square because silly me, didn't take the stroller. Because I thought, oh, she weighs like 15 pounds. She's tiny. She's light. 15 pounds gets really heavy when you're walking a lot. Anyway, so we did some shopping, got lots of souvenirs. In fact, I thought I had something in here, but I don't. The next morning we flew out, same thing, going back through Germany to the U.S. So we flew to Frankfurt, first leg done. waiting for the plane to go from Frankfurt to Miami. That was delayed and delayed. And finally, the plane boards. I get a bulkhead seat that has a bassinet. So once we took off, I'd be able to put her in the bassinet so she'd sleep. It's amazing how they do this. And this is one of the adoption flights. So they're used to this. The bulkhead's right in the front of the section. The bassinet hooks onto the wall, like under where the movie screen is. And it's a wonderful thing. So we get up, we take off, we're in the air for maybe 25 minutes or so. And the pilot comes on the PA speaking in German because it was Lufthansa. And all I could do is I see the people around me going, oh, no. And I'm wondering what's going on. And then they spoke in English. Basically, there was a problem with some of the instruments that weren't working properly. So they were going to have to circle and dump fuel and land again in Frankfurt until they could get the plane repaired. So I'm thinking, oh, God, no. And we did. So after about an hour circling and dumping fuel, we landed back in Frankfurt again. And, I was exhausted by this time. I was so tired because we left Moscow at like 2 o'clock in the morning. So by now, I don't even know what time it was, in the middle of the day or late in the day. I just wanted to sleep. And I'm talking to the people at Lufthansa, and I said, well, can you at least get me her stroller so I don't have to carry around this now 22-pound baby? And I must have looked really pathetic and crying, and because they brought me to a lounge area that had a private room. They fed us. It had a bed. And I guess, I think it was just a bed where we slept on together. They said, you can lie down here. You can sleep. We'll come pick you up when it's time to go back to your gate. And they did. So we got to sleep. We got to eat. I have a picture of Allison going down a slide because there was a little playground area there as well. Her first time on a slide. It's pretty awesome. They got us back to the gate just in time to board again. Got my bulkhead seat. We took off. I put her in the bassinet. She slept. I slept almost the whole way to Miami. And we flew to Miami because my dad wasn't doing well. And so I figured living in Los Angeles, I wanted him to meet his granddaughter. So we flew in through here and we spent about a week in Miami before heading back to Los Angeles. And my life has never been the same. So the day I was in court was Thanksgiving. And I, one thing I told the judge was, he asked, why do you want to adopt? Why this child? Why from Kazakhstan? And through my mishmash of tears, I said something to the effect of, today is the American holiday of Thanksgiving. And, I would be so grateful if you would let me be. Her name was Miguel. M-A-I-G-U-L or M-A-G-U-I-L, one of them. That was her name in Kazakh. I couldn't see calling a little girl, my ghoul was how they pronounced it. My ghoul. It sounded too ghoulish, if you would let me be my ghoul's mother, I'd be the most thankful woman on the planet. I don't know what I said, something equally silly like that. November 23rd is what we call our forever day because it's the day we became a forever family. And so it's Thanksgiving. It is my favorite holiday. And it's here we are tomorrow. It'll be 17 years since that day in court. 17 years ago, right now, I was with her in the orphanage getting to know my daughter. Adoption is a great way to make a family. If you've not considered it, if you're one of those couples or a single person who wants to have a child, let me suggest you look into adoption. My daughter couldn't be any more my kid if I had spat her out myself. And she's now 18. She's amazing. And she makes me proud, even when she's being difficult, which, she's 18. So what do you expect? Well, we made it through the hour. There's my adoption story. Sorry I didn't have the guests. but if I can answer any questions for you, feel free to email me, Nicole@NicoleSandler.com. And have a very happy, happy Thanksgiving. And you know what I'm most thankful for on this Thanksgiving. I'm taking off the next couple of days, but I will be back here on Tuesday with Gotta Laugh. So with that, have a very happy Thanksgiving, everyone. I'll see you next week.